chocolate and chocolate pudding, any desserts with chocolate, salads, pasta. Well, I like lots of food. I'm not very picky.
This is 14-year-old Maddie Clark. She's doing the 40-hour famine this weekend.
Some of the food I've cooked are baked goods, so like cookies, cakes, and then I've also cooked dinners like lasagna.
Welcome to the show. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
This week we're talking food and fasting and feasting. Food and eating are pretty basic elements of human life, but questions of what to eat, when, how, as well as when not to eat, can be a lot more complicated than they first appear. Natasha, you've been thinking and writing about this recently. Where do you think food fits into our lives? What's its place? What's its function?
Well, obviously, its place is quite central. Food is a biological necessity for us. We die if we don't eat. But it's also obviously a lot more than that. So I do know some people who, you hear people say this sometimes, that if they could just take a pill that would have all the nutrients that they need and do that instead of eating a meal, they would happily do that.
The only time that might be appealing is when you're facing the, you know, huge piles of washing up. Yeah. You might think that way, but otherwise you wouldn't at all, surely. I mean, eating food and also the community aspect to that, it's one of the great aspects of life. Lots of these shows, right? The cooking shows, we have celebrity chefs and celebrity cooks, and the kids are getting in on this, and there's some good parts to that. My son last night actually made these great little tarts with custard and strawberries, and they're fantastic. Better than anything I've cooked. So there's, you know, there's elements to this that are not only deeply pleasurable, but there's something, sort of a social aspect to this that I think most of us would be pretty sad to be without.
Yeah, and if you look at our kind of food programming and how dominant that's become on our TV screens, this is obviously a massive part of our culture. And food practices, the way we eat, what we eat, when we eat, is deeply cultural and deeply social. So if you think about it, when we organise to spend time together, we never do that in a way that doesn't involve consumption. We always catch up for coffee or meet for a drink or have dinner. There's no context in which we just sit down and talk without any kind of food. You know, this is a big deal, and it's something that differs from culture to culture. It says a lot about who we are and what our cultural identity is. You know, we do this differently to the way Spanish people do this or to the way Chinese people do this.
And we, of course, take on some of other traditions from other places, and that makes for a very rich environment. It's not only different between cultures, but it separates humans from animals. We don't just eat as a source of fuel. We snack, we dine, we even feast. And there's lots of ways in which people have commented in that separation of us from other animal life, where we do this thing which is a much more elevated form of food and eating. Now, what about not eating, though? I want to talk about this because you've written about it. It's just been a couple of weeks now since the end of Ramadan. That's the month where Muslims fast during daylight hours. And this week is the World Vision 40-hour famine, which is also looking at this idea of fasting. This is pretty foreign to most of us, though, isn't it? Not many of us go without food for very long.
No, it's very alien to our culture, I think. And in some ways, food culture, our practices related to food are fascinating. But our practices related to not eating are even more interesting, I think. So obviously, the way that comes through most strongly for most Westerners is in dieting, which is a very, for most people, unfun version of refraining from eating. And I think that's a really different phenomenon to what you see in something like Ramadan or in something like the 40-hour famine, in that dieting, even if it's important and it's virtuous and it's a good thing to do, it's healthy, it's essentially self-focused. I diet for me so that I can be healthy or for vanity reasons because I want to be a certain shape. And that's really not what you see historically in people's choices to fast. So fasting has a long tradition in Western and other religions and cultures. So philosophers going back to Plato and Socrates and Aristotle, Confucius, most religious figures have fasted for various reasons. And that's something that has always looked outwards rather than inwards, which is what our dieting seems to do. It's about, traditional fasting is about some kind of enlightenment, some kind of humility, thinking about something other than the body, other than the self. And I think that's something that our version in the form of dieting misses.
Yeah, there are plenty of diets around the place that involve an element of fasting today. There's that 5-2 diet. Lots of my friends seem to be doing that. And you have 2 days where you hardly eat anything, and then five, you sort of just normal. And people, they're doing that to lose weight and stay fit and so on. There's very few instances, though, in our culture where we do it for matters of contemplation or meditation or thinking about someone other than ourselves. What about the Bible, though? There's a long tradition of prayer and fasting in the Bible. What's that about?
The Bible is big on both feasting and fasting. So throughout the Old Testament, the people of God are told, they're actually commanded to feast, to spend certain days of the year feasting. And they also are commended, God commends it to them that they should be fasting, that occasionally certain events they should be refraining from eating in order to focus on spiritual things, to make sure they have things in the right order. It's very easy for us to think that eating is this absolute imperative and my body says I need to eat and therefore I will whenever my body says that. And to actually go, okay, this is the message that my body is sending me and instead I'm going to do something different, can really focus the mind on something higher and something outside of the self, I think.
Yeah, and in the biblical framework, the idea of fasting is very often attached to prayer and the idea of humbling yourself before God. It's a reminder of what comes first, God at the top, everything else under that umbrella, if you like. There's also a sense of fasting being attached to the idea of justice, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. There's actually occasions, particularly in the Old Testament, where God says to his people, you're doing this fasting thing, this kind of religious activity, but you're missing the point because you're ignoring social justice, and that's what I really care about. So the Bible explicitly links at various points this practice of fasting, of foregoing something for yourself in order to focus on God and in order to humble yourself before God, but it links that to how we're treating other people, that those things are actually essentially related. So I think that what's really interesting about fasting and Western culture at the moment is that we're potentially seeing a bit of a comeback of this trend of hunger and justice and those being related. So initiatives like Live Below the Line, where you eat for $2 a day for 5 days, to get that idea of this is what millions of people around the world are doing to raise awareness and to raise funds to support those people. I think that kind of thing really reflects this heritage of justice and fasting and those things being mutually effective.
We mentioned the 40-hour famine. World Vision has made this famous over many years now. And we're going to be talking now to Libby Sanders, who's a team leader at World Vision on 40-hour famine. I want to ask her about some things to do with this famine, why they do it, and why she thinks it adds something to people's lives in all sorts of different ways. Okay, thanks for joining us, Libby. The 40-hour famine's been going on for a number of years now. Why is this important to you guys? Where does it fit into your organisation's mission at World Vision?
This year is actually the 39th year of the 40-hour famine in Australia, so it does have a really long history, and it's quite embedded now in the culture of Australia, particularly with young Australians. In the work that I do, working mainly with high schools, the 40-hour famine really is an opportunity for a lot of Australians to have the first opportunity to hear about poverty and in particular hunger and what that can do to a child and the impact that can have on the life of a child. And so the 40-hour famine not only is a chance for many people to come to an understanding of what that is, but have the chance for the first time to really respond to that by participating, coming to an understanding of what it is to go without something for 40 hours, and then also fundraising to make a difference in the lives of those children who are going without. And it does make a really lasting impact. So it's got a really great message, and it plays a really key role with World Vision for our engagement with Australians.
Is it mostly children who do the 40-hour famine? What are the numbers like?
It's one of Australia's largest youth events. So usually it looks like about high school aged participants. That's usually the demographic, the largest demographic by far. But every year we have Australians that participate from all age groups. We have stories of people who have done it every single year since it started. And so there are people from all age groups. I've chatted on the phone with a few older Australians who are still participating into their older years. And so that's really encouraging to hear that anyone can really participate and anyone can join the message of what it is. I think it really applies to anyone to join in.
Libby, there are an increasing number, it seems, of these initiatives around where people go hungry to kind of show solidarity with global poverty. What difference does it actually make, do you think, for us to go hungry ourselves instead of just donating money to help hunger relief?
The thing is that it really does, first off, make a huge difference. For example, this year, just $40 raised in the 40-hour famine will go towards food and nutrition for a family of six for a whole month. That's not just a day, that's not a week, but a whole month. And the fact that it can go towards incredible work that not only addresses hunger, but it goes on to the following impact of that. So for young people overseas, hunger can really have an impact on the opportunity for education and to grow up strong and have opportunities later in life.
And Libby, what about the people who actually do the 40-hour famine? What do you think they most gain from the experience?
I think there's a lot that people can gain from the experience. The actual act of going without something, quite often it's food, but sometimes people go without technology or furniture. But the act of going without something for 40 hours helps us to understand what it's like for people who don't have the same privileges and opportunities that we have here in Australia or resources that we have. It's also, for a lot of young Australians who participate, that opportunity, as you said, to stand in solidarity as well. So they get the chance to make a huge difference by fundraising, but they also get to feel and empathise and kind of stand alongside others who are going without. And I think that's a really strong statement that people can make. I think it's a really engaging opportunity for people.
What would you say to encourage people to get involved or at least to go on and donate?
Yeah, I would say our website is a really great avenue if people are looking for a way to get involved with the 40-hour famine, and that's where you can sign up. It's a very quick process. All you have to do is make the decision to sign up, and you can create an online profile page if you'd like to be joining in the movement and asking people to support you. It's quite easy still. Just put it up on Facebook, your URL to your page, and you can easily get people to support you. You can also be donating on that page as well to others who are doing the 40-hour famine. Perhaps you can find someone that you know who's doing it. Or you can just support generally by making a general donation to what it is that the 40-hour famine is doing this year in Rwanda. The 40-hour famine website also shares more of the stories of Rwanda, where we're sending most of the funds this year is towards projects in Rwanda. And there are the stories of children from the communities that we're working with there, a boy named Promise and a girl named Chantel, and their stories are really powerful. And I think it'd be great for people to have a listen to those stories as well.
Well, it's great to hear about that, Libby. Thanks so much for that and good luck on the weekend.
Thank you.
Well, that was Libby Sanders, who's a youth representative of the 40-hour famine at World Vision. You can find out more about this by going to 40-hour famine, that's 440hourfamine.com.au. Let's hear again from 14-year-old Maddie Clark.
The experience of doing the 40-hour famine, it really made me think about how important food is and how like necessary it is and how hard it is for families that don't have food, because it is so essential to surviving. The 40-hour famine was definitely harder than I thought it would be, because I didn't realise how much energy like you get from food, and I didn't know how tired I would be and hungry I would be. I didn't realise the actual extent of it.
Well, fasting, feasting, famine, justice, these are things that we don't often think about that much. Our relationship to food often goes unexamined, but eating or not eating, those decisions are not necessarily neutral and carry a lot of significance. And, you know, if we are willing to forego food for something, that tends to show that it is something that we really care about.
Yeah, I think it's really important, actually, and a good opportunity when you start to think about our relationship to food and what we do with it. And because I think these things suggest a lot about who we are and what we think is truly important. And especially about ways in which it might be meaningful or worthwhile to refrain from eating in certain contexts. So you might want to think about that next time you're at the supermarket or at home chopping your onions. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.